starting out the US first, and the data coming through is mostly fairly positive. Over the past week, for example, you know, we had non-farm payrolls came out right at the end of the week, and although you know it wasn't a particularly powerful lift in non-farm payrolls, market expected a 50,000 increase, they got a 49,000 increase, and there was a bit of a downward revision to the fall going back the month before from 140,000 down to 227,000 down, but with a fairly soft participation rate there. The unemployment rate actually came down more than expected, and the unemployment rate fell to 6.3% from 6.7%. The other point about non-farm payrolls, average hourly earnings are running pretty well there at the moment. You know, going back to December, we had a 1% month-on-month increase, and that lifted the annual rate of change to 5.4%. We only had a minor lift in January, another 0.2%, but the annual rate of change for our average hourly earnings is 5.4 still on a year-on-year basis. And so, you know, that is just sort of you know, gives some wherewithal for consumer spending and spending generally to continue. And, of course, the other part of that story is that the $1.9 trillion U.S. Support package appears to be getting its way through. You know, that's on top of, you know, the $4 trillion that was spent since COVID started over there is providing the underpinning for spending to continue. We can see it particularly in things like construction spending. We had that number came out last week, and it was up 1% month-on-month after 1.1% gain. So this is total construction spending. You know, it's obviously going pretty well across the United States. There was a slight setback in the manufacturing PMI. We had the ISM manufacturing PMI for January. It was at 60.5 going back to December, slight slippage there to 58.7. But overall, you know, conditions, you know, look as if they're going to move towards stronger economic activity over time. And that's being very much supported by what's both the Fed and what it intends to do, which is support the continuing fiscal expansion that's occurring from the government. And so, you know, that's the underpinnings. This week in the US, yeah, there'll be a bit of to-ing and fro-ing in the Senate around the impeachment trial of Trump. You know, it is one of those distractions now. It gets in the way of continuing to confirm various appointments to President Biden's cabinet. But I think it's just that. It's going to be a distraction now most of the way through the course of the week. In terms of data reads out of the United States, not a lot. We've got the CPI coming out. CPI is chugging along between about 0.2, 0.4% month on month, depending on whether you're looking at the core or the headline CPI. And the annual change in the CPI is around the 1.5% mark, so no problem running through there. Although, you know, there is a proportion of the market which is saying, you know, as growth continues to accelerate, at some point inflation will pick up. And that certainly looks more likely in the United States than most other places because, you know, you have got some wages growth and earnings growth, which is running pretty strongly in the US at this point. So, yeah, it's just something that bears watching over time. We also get Michigan consumer sentiment coming out right at the end of the week on Friday. That has been falling down to 79 as I hope it might arrest and just start to trickle up again. So looking for around an 80.7 reading on that when that comes out on Friday. Out of China, last week we had manufacturing, non-manufacturing PMIs, both the government set and also the private sector cakes in set, and they settled back, you know, because I suppose, you know, we don't hear a lot from China what they've been doing in terms of new restrictions to try and get on top of COVID-19 outbreaks, but there were some restrictions that were put in place near Beijing, and so, you know, that's just starting to cut a little bit into these Chinese figures. And you can see it in the manufacturing PMI, where it just came down a touch unexpectedly to 51.3 from 51.9. And the non-manufacturing PMI, the services sector, you know, that obviously gets hit hardest, and that's come back to 52.4 from 55.7. And it was a similar story in the cakes in versions of that So the cakes in manufacturing PMI came back to 51.5 from 53, and the non-manufacturing PMI rather more, down to 52 from 56.3. This week in China is going to be relatively quiet because their New Year holidays start with a vengeance on Thursday. And ahead of that, we get one set of figures, and that's just the CPI reading comes out on Wednesday. And what we're looking at there is round about coming back a bit, actually, to minus 0.1% year-on-year from plus 0.2% going back the month before. And we also get the producer price index, which, if anything, will go in the opposite direction, and there'll be a little bit of upward pressure, plus 0.4% from minus 0.4%, but nothing in the scheme of things, and the main focus is towards the Lunar New Year holidays. And for the Chinese authorities, that's where they can't control their people. They're going to go home, hell or high water, and they're going to mix. And this is, you know, potential super spreader event, so they're watching that with some care, although they're also vaccinating very rapidly in China too. So that's the positive story, and that's a positive story which is developing in all the areas which have had very high COVID-19 outbreaks. Yeah, the worst of those outbreaks have definitely started to peak with the beginnings of vaccinations. And here in Australia last week, we had some data, which for the most part was exceptionally strong. We also had a lot from the RBA, including the latest RBA meeting and, of course, the quarterly monetary policy statement, a speech from the RBA governor and his parliamentary testimony too. Just looking at the data first, as I say, very strong. We had ANZ job ads, and for the most recent reading, where another 2.3% increase month on month after an 8.6% increase the month before. We also had December home loans, and the value of home loans, new commitments, and this is excluding refinancing, and they lifted 7.1%, way more than anybody expected, month on month, after a 5.5% month on month increase the month before. It is being led by owner-occupier loans, mostly for existing housing, and with first-time home buyers leading the charge. So this is on fire at the moment, under, you know, sort of all sorts of the government initiatives, very low interest rates, all of it helping to fire up home loans and buy, of course, by one remove, the housing market as well. We also had December home building approvals, and builders are responding to all this stuff. And so home building approvals, market expected they would lift 2.5% in December. They lifted by 10.9%. And it's particularly strong in private houses, that's, you know, non-units, up 15.8% month on month. And that was after a 2.3% increase the month before. So these are really starting to take off too. So you're getting a lot of power to the economy coming through the housing construction side, and housing transfers running through into GDP as well. And we also had it there in the international trade data. When you put together both goods and services, exports rose 3% for the most recent month of December. Imports fell by 2%. So the surplus on goods and services went from over $5 billion going back to November to $6.78 billion for the month of December. So a strong read there, you know, implying good contribution from net exports. And then we had December retail sales, which was a final figure, which was down 4.2% after being up 7.1% the month before. But the quarterly real retail sales, the market expected that to be up 1.9% quarter on quarter. It was up 2.5%. So, you know, really strong contribution coming through to household consumption expenditure from that when we get our GDP data in early March. Then we had the various parts from the RBA. The RBA meeting, very interesting in that, you know, they've extended the current QE. The current QE was due to run out in mid-April. They've extended it by another $100 billion, $5 billion a month of purchases. At the moment, you know, the RBA is purchasing about $1.5 billion more a month, or more a week, than the government's issuing, even with its large fiscal expansion. So, you know, we've got a lot of monetizing going on at the moment, and Reserve Bank intends to continue doing that for the time being. They left all their rates unchanged, but very firm statements at the end of the statement accompanying the decision that they intend to keep the cash rate down at 0.1% through to the beginning of 2024 at least. And what enables them to do that, they say, is that it's still going to take time for the unemployment rate to come down, the labour market to tighten, and inflation to get consistently above 2-3%. Then we get through to the quarterly monetary policy statement, which backs that up, but with more puzzles in it than anything else. For the third consecutive quarter, we've had major upward revisions to the economic forecasts. And these are the strongest yet. So to give you some indication of the order of revision, just for the middle of 2021, the RBA was previously saying that GDP growth would be 6% year-on-year. It's revised that up to 8% year-on-year. Employment growth, which they had at 3% year-on-year middle of this year, they've revised up to 5.75% year-on-year. And the unemployment rate, which they had at 7.5% year-on-year, this is only back in November when they made these last forecasts, they're now talking about 6.5%. They're also one of the most massive things I've ever seen here is the terms of trade, in other words, what our exports buy in terms of imports. And the terms of trade, which really adds to national income. And the middle of June, on their last forecast, they had the terms of trade at minus 5%. They've revised that to plus 11%. Now, that is truly stunning. You know, that's a huge lift in terms of national income coming through from the terms of trade with that revision. Then it gets really weird because you'd think that some of that would be feeding through quite powerfully into what they'd expect about wages growth and also the inflation rate. They've had to make some upward adjustment to their inflation forecasts, but they are really quite minor compared with the forecasts they've made to economic growth. So, you know, for example, the wage price index, according to them in June this year, will be one, the same as it was in the November forecast, and they've only drifted up about a quarter of a percentage point in their forecast all the way out to 2023. And the inflation forecasts, again, minor changes with about a quarter percentage point lift in inflation rates going out. So it just doesn't hang together. You know, they've been wrong-footed every single quarterly statement, and this one the most yet, where they've had to really ramp up growth forecasts and everything else. And they're saying with all that pressure from demand that they still think that, you know, wages growth is going to hold down forever, just about, and with it, the inflation rate. So this is rather wacky stuff. And the statement from the board is that, you know, on the basis of their current expectations about wages and also inflation, that's what allows them to say that the cash rate is going to stay down. It's going to be questionable how much longer, you know, they can maintain that position. You know, obviously, it has to be another quarterly. With the forecast coming through before they can say anything. But, you know, for the time being, they're determined to keep things ultra-loose, which continues to confirm they're going to be upwardly revising their growth forecasts again when they get through to the next 3 months. But they've got this fiction that somehow you can hold inflation under control with all this. So it's where that breaks at some point. It's an issue. So, yes, if you took them at face value, Reserve Bank saying no cash rate change for the next 3 years at least, but, you know, their forecast, at least the growth parts and everything else that feeds into ultimate inflation. So watching that over time, but for the time being, you know, you take them at face value, and they're going to be leaving the cash rate where it is. The other corollary on this is, you know, with that sort of growth, and this sort of monetary policy guidance, a lot of risk assets are going to get more inflated, overinflated than we've ever seen in history over the course of the next year or so, if they're going to continue with this sort of policy prescription. So that's the other corollary which comes from what we're seeing from the RBA at present. Not much from Europe. Well, there was, had a fair number of data points, most of them slightly better. Manufacturing PMI, they actually edged up to 54.8. The unemployment rate's holding down quite nicely at 8.3. They also had their Q4 GDP, and they dipped back into negative with the quarterly GDP. It was down 0.7%. That was being up 12.4% the quarter before. That's what going back into blanket restrictions will do. So, yeah, that's one area where they've got double dips. We're not looking at double dips here. The US didn't get a double dip, but certainly they're in Europe for the time being. So it makes them thinking about double down probably on policy prescriptions and how to lift those things.